Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Strange Pathways. I am your host, Scott. I've had a good week. I hope you've had a great week too. Want to throw a big thank you out to one or two guys over on 4chan's X board who suggested my podcast. It's so odd still and so nice to see, you know, somebody saying, oh, Strange Pathways, give this a listen. And one of them described me as comfy. And I think that's really just the most fantastic way of describing me in this show. Comfy. And I hope you do feel that way too. Everybody wants to be comfy. On to this week's tales. Our first tale is going to take us all the way back to February of 2023, Long Island, New York. Now, the witness in this case is going by the name B. B and I have something in common. That's right, you guessed it. We're both huge, huge fans of phantomsandmonsters.com. B wrote in saying, hey, you know what? I've been a fan of the site Phantoms and Monsters for a while. And he goes on to tell Lon Strickler, the webmaster of Phantoms and Monsters, that he lives in Oceanside, New York. Now that's about 50 minutes outside of Manhattan. He's not doing too bad. He lives in a townhouse gated community. It's about 3 miles from the Atlantic Ocean. So where they're at, it's usually warmer than the rest of the state. They don't get a lot of snowfall, something I'm kind of jealous of right now. And like I said, B's doing okay. He's a sales engineer. He's 59. He's divorced. And he shares a two-level apartment with another divorcee, a 60-something-year-old guy named L. He describes it as an odd couple situation. Now, B's bedroom faces south. There's this beautiful large bay window, 5 foot by 8 foot. There's two sets of blinds on this. One of the sets is a blackout blind. I used to work nights. I can tell you how important blackout blinds can be. Now, these specific blackout blinds, no light, almost no light gets through. And even if it does, it's just a little sliver of light from a passing car. L has the master bedroom. That's about 30 feet down the hall. His room faces north, and there's a big double sliding door onto L's terrace. Now, last February, B and L experienced a moderate snowstorm. It went from late afternoon well into the night. Now, B's laying in bed. It's that scary part of the night around 3 a.m. He's still awake. He's hearing the thunder outside. He thinks that's pretty weird for a snowstorm, but not unheard of. B gets up, walks across the room, stood in front of his dresser, takes a sip of water. Now remember, the blackout blinds are up. It's totally dark, but B knows the room. Out of nowhere, the entire room lights up. Bright, white, absolute white light. It lasts a 3-4 second blip and then cuts out. It filled the room. No shadows. No spot left untouched by this light. Now, B, the first thing he thinks of, this was lightning. But the nightshades, those blackout curtains, they're blocking everything. There's no way that lightning should have been more than a sliver. But lightning doesn't last 3 or 4 seconds. Lightning's not this bright. Lightning's not this solid. B says it was almost as if someone had turned on a light switch, looked around for a few seconds, and then shut it off. He said it to him, it was almost like a scene from Star Trek, whenever the bridge gets scanned by some weird alien and everything goes white. That was it. That's the entire event. The next morning, B and L are having breakfast together. And he goes, "Hey, L, did you see any kind of bright white light last night?" Now, he says L's attitude is kind of like, he uses the phrase two-dimensional, right? But I kind of put it this way. There are certain people that are complex, and there are certain people that if you give them a hamburger and a Coke, they're happy, right? So I picture L as a hamburger and Coke kind of guy. Now, L has no interest in the UFO phenomena. He doesn't believe in ghosts, doesn't even believe in God. He doesn't discuss those subjects. He even ridicules B for his belief in certain things. But this time, L, he goes, "Oh my God, yes, I saw that. It filled the room from the inside out. What the hell was that?" So this was not an imaginary event. And then B realizes, these two rooms are separated by quite a distance. These two rooms are facing in opposite directions. So B's guess is that they were scanned by something. There was no missing time. There were no body marks, you know, the weird scoops. There were no weird memories popping in. So what was this? Was this just a blip? Did something scan them and didn't want them? Or maybe something scanned them and was afraid of B and L. We always picture the paranormal as being better than us, stronger than us, smarter than us, braver than us, in complete control. But what if something scanned B and L and went, Whoa, no, we're not messing with this. This is dangerous. And it may not have even been that B and L were dangerous men. Things don't have to be mean to be dangerous. Just the mere presence could have hurt them. Radioactive isotopes don't mean to be dangerous. That doesn't mean I'm not afraid of them. So maybe the reason a lot of us aren't contacted is our mere presence is a danger to those visitors around us. A little food for thought. Our next tale is going to take us back to February 28th, 1959, somewhere between Nampa, Idaho, and Fort Bliss in El Paso, Texas. Private First Class Jerry Irwin is a Nike missile technician. Now, Irwin had a leave of absence. He was returning from that leave of absence. He reached Cedar City, Utah, turned southeast on Route 14, whenever the landscape brilliantly lit up. Irwin's eyes move to the sky, and he sees a glowing object. Now, this object crosses the sky from right to left, right in front of him, scares him. Irwin pulls his car over, gets out and looks there, getting a better view of this. He watches this craft continue until it's blocked from his sight by a ridge. In his mind, what he's seeing is this is a large airplane making a forced landing. Irwin's military. This is a man of honor, a man of action. So he's going to go help. He's thinking, this is a crash. So he writes a note, leaves it on his car. The note says, have gone to investigate possible plane crash. Please call law enforcement officers. He affixes this note to his steering wheel. And then he gets another idea. He has a can of shoe polish with him. So he takes two of his fingers, dips it in the shoe polish, and writes the word stop on the side of his car. Hopefully this will grab the attention of some policemen, somebody that'll stop and help him. And that's exactly what happens. 30 minutes later, a fish and game inspector sees the car. He looks at the note, reads it, immediately took the note to the Cedar City Sheriff's Office. The sheriff there, one Otto Fife, organized a search party, headed immediately out to the site. And an hour later, Irwin was found, but he was unconscious. There's no sign of a plane crash. But there's something wrong with him. He's unconscious. He's not responding to anything. He's taken to a hospital, examined by one Dr. Broadbent. And Broadbent sees Irwin's temperature is normal, his breathing is normal, but Irwin cannot be stirred. Broadbent thinks this all has to be something mental. He diagnosed Irwin with hysteria. Irwin does finally come to. He feels fine. But he's really puzzled by the strange object he's seen. He's also lost his jacket. It wasn't on him. He wasn't wearing it whenever the searchers found him. It's decided, though, that the best place for Irwin is a military hospital. So he's flown back to Fort Bliss. He's put under observation at William Beaumont Hospital for a span of 4 days and then returns to duty afterwards. But unfortunately, he's lost his security clearance at this time. He's considered not as dependable. A couple of days later, he's walking at the base and faints, but recovers almost immediately. On March 15th, Irwin faints one more time on an El Paso street. He's not able to be stirred, and they take him to Southwest General Hospital. His condition at this time, exactly the same as his state in Cedar City. At 2 a.m., Irwin wakes up and goes, "Were there any survivors?" He thought it was February 28th again, and was absolutely stunned. Stunned whenever somebody goes, That was 2 weeks ago. Once again, taken to William Beaumont Hospital, placed under observation in the psychiatric ward, and is there for a month. He's released. He's deemed normal. And the very next day, Private Jerry Allen leaves the fort AWOL without leave. He catches a bus to El Paso, arrives from El Paso in Cedar City, Sunday afternoon, April 19th, and returns to the scene of this very, very strange encounter. He heads straight to the area that had happened, and there he finds his missing jacket. There's a pencil in the buttonhole of the jacket. And around this pencil is a piece of paper wrapped tightly. Seemingly in a trance, he takes the paper and burns it. Erwin has trouble finding his way back to the car. He turns himself in to Sheriff Fife. Sheriff Fife explains to him the first incident. One Jim Lorenzen hears about this strange case. He contacts Erwin, and Erwin, at his urging, undergoes another psychiatric examination. Same results. Same results. The Inspector General examines his case. On July 10th, Erwin again enters Beaumont Hospital. After being released, he did not report for duty on August 1st. A month later, he was AWOL and has never been seen again. Our last tale tonight, I came across on Reddit's paranormal news board. Now, the witness is user external underscore lawfulness 9. I'm just going to call her L. Now, L's husband was born in South Carolina. He had a great aunt. And this great aunt lived in one of the nicer, older homes in Charleston. This home was built in the 1700s, it's fairly large, and he always liked exploring this house as a child. The most interesting part to Elle's husband was the little door. If you go to the third story of this house, right next to the stairs, there was a little door. But only sometimes. It was random. He always liked to run up and check. Was the door there? Was it not? This door was narrower, shorter than all the other doors in the house. It didn't lead to a closet or a cupboard, but it led to a normal room. L has thrown the word normal in quotations. And she's right to do so. Of course, the room isn't always there. But whenever it was, the door was always locked. But it's one of those old doorknobs. So Elle's husband, whenever he was a little boy, would put his eye right up to the keyhole and see inside. Now, this room had 1950s era furniture. It was unremarkable. Elle's husband could tell it had a window, but if he was outside of the house, he couldn't find that window. But that feeling was there that this room was bad in some way. Elle's husband, even at that time, was a bit of an explorer. He, even though the room is bad, he'd love to get in there. He did try to talk to his great aunt about it once as a child. He was helping her cook. And instead of going, "Oh, that's your imagination, honey," or "No, you're seeing things," she said, "Now's not the time for that. Now's the time for baking." She seemed uncomfortable. So Elle's husband let it go. When he turned 10, Elle's husband moved across the country, so he didn't get to see his great aunt much after that. But during one visit, he decides he's going to ask her about the room again. She was old by that time. She was having memory issues, and she said, "I don't know what you're talking about." Elle's husband's sister never mentioned the door. He's never asked her about it because supernatural things scare her. The same with Elle's husband's mother. And he's not really close to anyone on that side of the family. But is there a precedent for this? There was a wonderful book years and years ago, complete fiction, but amazingly well written, called House of Leaves. That had a door to somewhere that was just there one day. I've always been fascinated with House of Leaves. Now, this story has been giving me a little bit of pause. I live in a fairly large, fairly old house. I have a friend moving in with me and my wife. He's going through a bit of a tough time right now. And we're going to give him two rooms on the third floor of the house. Now, I'm a toy collector. I love old toys. Transformers are my absolute favorite, but I'm keen on Star Wars, He-Man stuff. I'm recently getting into Star Wars, Godzilla, Ghostbusters. You get the point. You've got me on a subject now that I could spend hours and hours and everybody here would just lapse into a coma. But I was cleaning out one of the closets. Found a few toys that I didn't know I had. A Kong Skull Island playset. A Castle Grayskull from the He-Man line. I didn't know I had these toys. That's not like me. And then I looked at the top of the closet. And there at the very top of the closet was a little tiny door on the ceiling that I'd never, ever seen before. It's not big enough for me to crawl through. I'd probably have trouble getting my head through it. But it is there. I have never, ever noticed that before. I don't know where those toys that were in that closet, those two particular toys, came from. They weren't there when I moved in. It is possible, nay likely, I purchased them at one point, threw them in the closet, forgot about it. But hearing Elle's story, finding that door, it's given me a little bit of pause. I found the door first, and then I found Elle's story. So it wasn't like I read Elle's story and started looking through my big house for tiny, tiny doors. No, I saw the door, thought that's odd, saw the toy, said that's really odd, and then found this story. Should I go through that door? Should I try to open it? Let me know in the comments down below. Thank you for joining us once again here on Strange Pathways. If you are having mental health trouble, dealing with a paranormal incident, please reach out to the Opus Network, www.opusnetwork.org. Our Twitter, Pathways Strange. TikTok, I know I don't update that very often, Strange Pathways Podcast. Instagram, Strange Pathways Podcast. Come on over to our Facebook, where not going to have a lot of images this week because, quite frankly, not a lot of images to go with this week's tales. Sometimes it's like that. But you can email me, strangepathwaysmail@gmail.com. Be sure to go over to YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. Thank you so much for joining us here this week on Strange Pathways. If two things before we go, if you get the chance, and you really should make the time, check out this week's episode or any of the previous episodes of The Cult of SMMI right here. Wherever you're listening to it, you'll find it in the playlist. We have it on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts. It is all over the place. It is some terrifying true life stuff. And here, you know, we deal with cutesy little things like, you know, was it an alien? Was it a ghost? Is this person lying? Maybe this person imagined it. No. Whenever you go and you listen to the cult of SMMI, that stuff happened. Allegedly, that stuff happened. So please, please, I feel like the cult of SMMI is the most important work I've ever done in podcasting. Secondly, if you're a praying type, if even if you just want to send out some good vibes, one of my big inspirations in radio, Ian Punnett, he passed away. Ian Punnett was one of my favorite coast to coast hosts, probably my second or third favorite. You know, you have Art, you have Dave Schrader, but then Ian Punnett, man. Ian Punnett and Dave Schrader were just like even for me as far as coast to coast hosts. And I still listen to Dave Schrader's stuff on YouTube. He's better than he ever was. But Ian Punnett was amazing. He was just incredible. And this world is a little bit darker without him. So in honor of Ian Punnett, I won't be using my normal sign-off. Take care of yourselves and each other. But know that it's in my heart. Instead, those who know Ian Punnett's work will know what this is. And if you don't, I hope this inspires you to go listen to some of his work. So this week, Deus Te Amat, and I do too.